I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Makes once, fakes twice, gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. Before these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse podcast presented by the King's Herald. My name is Brendan Nunez. Got Rich Ivanowski on here as we always do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
Doing really good. I am getting so excited. It is spooky season and draft season all at once. We're within 3 weeks, less than 3 weeks from this draft.
Wow. Yeah, definitely approaching pretty quick here, and glad to have the knowledge going into the draft this year. I think it's going to be fun sitting there on draft night and actually knowing most of these selections even going into the later parts of the second round. And you know, some of the guys we're talking about today, I guess could maybe sneak into the first round for two of them. I don't see it as likely, but you know, early second rounders likely, and then we're gonna touch on some that, you know, even could potentially go undrafted. So we got quite a range we're working with now, and we got five guys that you classified as small forwards, and you know, maybe some of them play a little bit of another position. But yeah, for the sake of breaking them down for different podcast episodes, I think we kind of labeled them as roughly three guards, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I cheated. We had 25 guys that we wanted to cover, and I'm like, and I just noticed, you know, five of them are point guards, and then it's going to break down a little bit. I think five of them are centers, five of them are point guards. That's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. This like wing position, what even separates a two from a three from a four is getting more vague every day. And yeah, like if we're going to be straight up with it, it was more like eight shooting guards and two small forwards, but we just kind of pushed some of the bigger, I pushed some of the bigger shooting guards into the small forward spot.
Yeah, no worries. Glad to be touching on these guys. And last episode was Jamias Ramsey, Emmanuel Quickly, Sam Merrill, Skylar Mays, and Nate Hinton. And this one, we have Cassius Stanley from Duke. I have Elijah Hughes from Syracuse, Jay Scrubb, who plays at a community college, Najee Marshall from Xavier, and Mason Jones from Arkansas. Last time we went based on Brett's consensus board. Do you have that in front of you possibly?
So I don't, but I do have my own rankings, and I wonder if you just read them off in your own rankings.
Because I may have did, unintentionally.
If you did, then we are in agreeance.
Okay.
So why don't we just do them in that order?
All right. Cassius Stanley from Duke, an absolute ridiculous athlete that you're talking about here. You know, insane vertical that you're working with. Specifically, you're talking about a jumping athlete, and 12.6 points his freshman year at Duke. He's an older freshman, 12.6 points, 4.9 rebounds, 1.0 assist, and 0.7 steals and blocks, both of those individually. Per game, 47.4% from the field, 36% from three, and 73% from the free throw line for Cassius Stanley. Yeah, I mean, if this guy was running in pace in transition with De'Aaron Fox and what should be a high-paced Sacramento team, I mean, in transition, Stanley's a problem for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. This is by far the strongest trait of any – strongest, like, single skill or differentiator of any of the five that we'll be talking about tonight. Absolute monster of an athlete in Cassius Stanley. I think the one downside of the physical profile is it's not much of a wingspan for Stanley. He's listed at 6'6", and while still unofficial, widely reported 6'7 wingspan. And you think like 6'6 guy, good frame, super athlete, this is going to be a small forward. But then you see the wingspan and you have to wonder a little bit if a 6'7 wingspan would work. But again, not official, so I'm not going to beat him up too much for it. And then the other thing you mentioned that stood out to me just in going through these basic numbers for him is the age. He is a freshman, was a freshman, or how would you say that, you know, just leaving his freshman season at Duke, yet he is 21 already. Surprisingly, like, you know, surprisingly old, 2 years older than, basically 2 years older than like a Ramsey that we went over last time, going to be older than Jay Scrub, who we'll get to in a minute, who's played a couple of years of community college ball. So yeah, I think like when you say freshman, 6'6", super athlete, you get really excited, and there's a few things to bring us back down to earth right away.
Yeah, definitely is. And he has a limited game to him, but the one other really positive I thought of his offensive game was his catch and shoot knockdown percentage, you know, per synergy catch and shoot. He was in the 93rd percentile, 43.8%, 65% adjusted field goal percentage there. Yeah, I think as a spot up guy, when you're talking knocking down 3-point shots, he's going to do that well. It's when he's forced to put the ball on the floor or really do anything except catch and shoot where you get a little bit concerned with his offense.
Yeah, I think self-creation is kind of a zero for him. And I think creating for others is kind of a zero. You know, we can't say like a 21-year-old, we don't, you know, we can't say he'll never be able to pass the ball well or create for himself, but I'm certainly not building that into my projection for him. So he could be a bit of a problem in terms of ball movement there. So I think role player is accurate to just slap that on him early on. You know, you mentioned the catch and shoot. So if he can be kind of a 3-and-D guy, there's a good theory for him. But yeah, if you're looking for more, I think it does limit the ceiling.
Yeah, and I'll say that I thought that he did a good job of kind of just playing that role at Duke. Being one of the better guys, he was asked to do a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, specifically in transition, like Trey Jones, I mean, Stanley seemed like a favorite of Jones, understandably, leaking out and constantly throwing down crazy lob or leak ahead passes there. And yeah, I felt like he didn't do too much on the offensive end. There's times that, like you're saying, he put the ball on the floor and, you know, wasn't quite able to create for others. I thought that he had some tunnel vision at times and his poor handle led him to struggle at times there. But I think that, excuse me, for the most part, he understood his role at Duke. And I would think that he's not going to play outside of himself when he gets to the NBA at the next level.
No, I think you're right. It makes sense. You know, he's not going to try to create for himself when he hasn't been doing that earlier on. You know, you wouldn't start trying to create for yourself suddenly once you reach the NBA if it hasn't been a part of your game in the past. And I want to revisit the shooting question with you because you seem to kind of put it automatically in his strength category. And I know you were specific about catch and shoot and I can get there with you, but his shooting overall, talking like, you know, off movement, off the dribble, and just looking at the volume and the percentage in college, are you just banking a good 3-point shot considering, you know, 36% on 3 attempts per game? Neither of those is impressive.
Right. Yeah, with the catch and shoot, I do feel good about it. I don't think he's a great 3-point shooter or anything, but I think that he's a good 3-point shooter. And I think that he'll have some respect from the defense and because of that, have a bit of a gravity, you know, enough that occasionally he'll be able to cut back door and be able to use that athleticism to finish at the rim at times. But yeah, I don't think that he's going to be a great 3-point shooter or anything, but I think that that percentage could go up a little bit there. I think that, you know, what, 37, 38% three-point shooter if he's really just shooting off the catch, which I kind of think is what's going to happen for the most part in the NBA?
I mean, yeah, it's hard to like just predict the percentage because so much goes into the types of the shots. If he's only taking open catch and shoot threes, sure, 38% feels reasonable. But then, you know, a lot of players shoot worse than they shot in college with the line, you know, it's a three-point line being a further distance and the defense, you know, being a higher level. So, like, if we're talking about just open shots, I could definitely see it and with however much he improves. But I could also see it not working out. Like, I could also totally, totally envision him being, like, a 34% guy. And I think that shooting is the swing skill for him.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And even with that being the swing skill, like, I don't think you're talking too high of a floor for Stanley. I guess, like, extreme ceiling for him would be, like, a really improved handle. But that's kind of, like, some outlier improvement that you'd be talking about there. Because, yeah, I'm with you. I think that there is a chance where he's a little bit of a subpar three-point shooter. But, yeah, while you don't really enjoy him putting the ball on the floor, I think that with the athleticism he has, and he wasn't an amazing finisher, but due to just being in the air for so long, I think that he got some kind looks from just being up there longer than some of the opposing defenders, that if he has a respectable three-point shot, he can attack a closeout on occasion, like here and there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he can attack a closeout because he's such a good athlete that if he gets a guy that's off balance or he just gets kind of space
right,
because of a wild closeout, then, yeah, I agree with you. But I don't think it would come from, like, he's attacking a closeout. Here comes this, another defender rotating towards him. He's going to step back and shoot a jumper. Like, that is not the type of attack that he would be good at. The type of attack is you get one wild guy and he flies to the rim.
Yeah, and probably goes for a charge.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think the ceiling is an above average 3-and-D guy. You know, we didn't talk about the defense too much, but I would probably kind of put it in that shooting area as far as being a strength or weakness, where it's a little above average. And so I think he could turn out to be an above average 3-and-D guy, not an elite 3-and-D guy, but an above average 3-and-D guy with a pretty elite set of, you know, athletic skills.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about his defense. I'm with you that it's kind of a swing skill, because the idea for Stanley is a 3-and-D player. And he has, with his athleticism, a good lateral quickness to him. I think he can stay in front of guys. And we saw that, I think, you know, guarding twos and I guess like maybe some threes. But I don't know, like at times he was a little out of control on his closeouts. And I just felt like he didn't have great rotations he was working with. And maybe just with some comfort in NBA training, that could get a little better. So he has tools he's working with on defense, but I'm not super confident in how he's going to fare on that end of the floor.
Yeah, I might be a little higher on his defense than you, but again, I think, you know, I was describing a ceiling there for him. So I don't think we're too far off. Where I had kind of a medium average outcome for him is just an average 3-and-D guy, like average shooter, average defender, but still that super athleticism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting comp I saw from this YouTube video was Gerald Green, and I thought that wasn't bad.
Yeah, no, that's not bad. I think Green, like towards the end of his career, became a really high level shooter, but he also got in that Rocket system that was just all they ever asked him to do was 3-and-D, and so he got pretty good at it. That makes sense.
You
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that means hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Do you want to move on to Elijah Hughes here?
Just to discuss a floor real quick. I could see a world where the shot isn't real, the defense isn't real, the inability to create for himself and create for others is serious enough that, you know, he's got an okay floor, but I could see a world where it's just kind of like, this guy is a great athlete, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I could definitely see that being the case. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it's a great floor he's working with. Like, it's, I don't know, it's not horrible, but then at the same time, for there being a subpar ceiling, like, he's just kind of eh as a prospect. Like, he'll have some highlights that he's working with, obviously, with a crazy bounce. But overall, I mean, like, having a 3-and-D role player with this bounce would be something valuable, but yeah, I'm with you. I could also see him kind of fizzing out, and I'm not like, this isn't like a late first rounder for me or anything like that. And even at 35, like, I don't feel great about Stanley for Sacramento.
That's interesting. I think so.
Right, I wouldn't hate now, it.
Yeah. He's in that range for me. Like, I think he's going to end up more like 37, 38 for me, but yeah, like, mm-hmm. That, you don't hate that.
Yeah, because I see the, especially, you know, if Sacramento's running in transition, like, I think that would bode really well for him. But yeah, it's not like I would despise him on the roster. Like, 43, I'd probably be happy with Stanley. I'd prefer someone with a little more upside probably.
Yeah, and then in terms of him being able to guard threes, can he or can he not do that? And then does that affect your feelings on him for Sacramento specifically?
I don't know. Like, he might almost have a better chance of guarding one, since it's just like lateral quickness that I feel like he has. And I guess there's okay strength, but I don't know. I think he's primarily guarding twos, and then like you can get away with some minutes on ones or threes, I guess. Like, if you're rolling out Bogey as a three in some lineups, I guess you could roll out Stanley. But I think that the idea of Stanley on the Kings would be if you moved on from one of Buddy or Bogey and he's your backup too.
Yeah. Bouncy 3-and-D shooting guard feels about right. I know it's the small forward episode. But yeah, that's about where I'm at.
Yeah. And then for Elijah Hughes, the forward from Syracuse, I have 6'6" and unofficial wingspan I saw was 6'9". Feel free to correct me if you saw anything else there. 19 points. This is his junior season at Syracuse, which he did spend 4 years in college, because what I see on Basketball Reference is there was a transfer year that he didn't play after a freshman year at East Carolina, and then junior and senior season were played at Syracuse. But that senior year stat line, 19.0 points, 4.9 rebounds, 3.4 assists, as well as 1.2 steals, 0.8 blocks, and 2.3 turnovers on 42% from the field, 34% from three on 7 attempts a game, and 81% from the free throw line. Elijah Hughes was the guy on that Syracuse team. I feel like that's important to note for some of these percentages.
Yeah, that is definitely important. Kind of like a bucket getter type of guy. Although the question is, can his like bucket getting translate? Like, you know, if your best skill is just like ISO offense, creating shots and making tough shots, if you're not going to do that at an NBA level, then, you know, suddenly your biggest strength is not super important. And then how severely does that affect you as a prospect?
Right. Yeah. He's not a crazy athlete or anything where he's going to be able to blow by guys and then kind of use his athleticism in order to create space in that sort of way. But I thought that he had some, you know, like almost pro looking hang dribbles and step backs that he was working with, and good change of pace, even though that top pace isn't great that he's working with or anything. But yeah, I mean, he's an ISO scorer, really. He had the third most ISOs in college basketball. He makes a lot of tough shots, and I think there is a lot of value in that. And I don't want to say he's like a poor athlete or anything. I think he's about average probably for what you're working with. So yeah, I mean, I think being able to get a shot and have this high release that he's working with and a smooth stroke, I think that he needs to be able to play off the ball as well. And I thought that he did that okay during what I saw at Syracuse, but that's going to need to be developed a little bit more for sure, because I'm with you that, you know, he's not going to be regularly creating space for himself at the NBA level.
Yeah. I have my doubts that his game can translate. Like, you mentioned a lot of craft stuff, and we've kind of already seen it with these guys. Going back to last episode, the guys that are four-year collegiate players that develop a high IQ and a high level of craft and just kind of know how to beat other younger college players, it may not, you know, you can be dominant at that level. Like even like a Skylar Mays, like, right, he's killing it in college, but then it's like, I'm not sure that any of this will actually matter in the NBA when you get to such a higher level league. I'm not sure that I'm trying to picture an NBA team using Elijah Hughes as an ISO scorer, and I'm like, I don't think that really works.
Yeah, right. It'd be obviously in a bench capacity, and what, like, are you talking like, you know, what, like Alec Burks sort of role, I guess, you know, Sacramento legend Alec Burks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just not a useful level. I will say, I thought that his catch and shoot numbers and his, especially like off of movement, the way his shot looks and the way it goes down, that can be salvageable. So if you had to throw out the ISO stuff at the NBA level, there's enough scoring, I think, to work with off ball. And while he's not a great athlete by any means, I think he is a pretty good vertical athlete. Not really a horizontal athlete, but he has some shot blocking upside. I think he can get off the ground and get up pretty high, pretty fast without much of a load. And that's, so, you know, that's exciting for me for a guy that I want to call a small forward. And, you know, the 6'6", the 6'9", unofficial wingspan that can block some shots. You know, I don't think he's a good defender, but with that upside, do you think you can at least call him a three?
I think that you can. You know, he's got some okay weight on him too at 215. He almost reminded me of like Gallinari at the college level in ways. Yeah, I think that he has some okay, like you're saying, length, size, and strength to him to be a three in the NBA. And yeah, the skills that he has in isolation, I think likely the way that they translate best for him is, you know, obviously being able to play off the ball and then just taking advantage of those situations when it's swung to you and you have one or two reads to make. And yeah, being able to take a little step back or pass fake and pull it or step in or even getting to the rim. I thought he did an okay job at times, was a little bit crafty there. So yeah, I think that he can play a three in the NBA and probably also play a two. And you mentioned the defense, like Syracuse just sits in a 2-3 the whole time. And everything I read on him was just like, I have no clue what to make of him defensively because he just sat in a 2-3 the whole time. And it's just not a scheme that you're going to see very often in the NBA. It wasn't like, I think that if he was some phenomenal defender, you would definitely still be able to notice it in that scheme. So I don't think that he's great there, but I think there's a chance he's a positive defender. It's just kind of been hard to tell.
Right. And I think that is a negative for him because he's going to be 23, you know, he's going to turn 23 in his rookie year. And if you're teaching him NBA offense now at 23, essentially, even if he has the capability to be good at it, he's really far behind. Coming from that zone system, like you mentioned, it's just, I don't want to just call that like a neutral thing because like any sort of experience with an NBA type of defense, or at least something closer to it, would be a plus. And so at that point, like, and I know I mentioned the shot blocking potential, but I do just have a feeling that he's going to be a poor defender, at least for a while. And that is also scary when you're talking about a guy that could be a small forward, because there is such importance and such automatic value for a guy that can play the three. But if you can't defend the three, you're not a three. And I'm worried that that means he's not a three, at least for a good chunk of his career.
Yeah, I truly don't know what to make of his defense because I think that he could go the way you're saying. And then I think he also could just be a slight positive on that end that can kind of hold his own against, you know, backup threes and, you know, I guess occasional low end starting threes in the NBA. But yeah, like I really genuinely would not be surprised to see it go either way. And what do you make of the floor of Hughes?
Yeah, I think it's pretty low. He's an offense first guy whose offense isn't really good enough to affect an NBA game. So that's problematic for me. Even if the defense is some uncovered thing where you put him in man defense all the time and he's actually better than we thought and he learns it quicker than we thought, it's still, I don't think it's enough to like win him a spot in the league. So yeah, I mean, he's always going to be an offense first guy and I don't see his offense being good enough, or at least like if we're talking floor, I certainly don't see it being good enough. I think that's like a, you know, a G League type of guy, honestly.
Right. Yeah. And then I'll say my opinion on his ceiling is that, like, I actually think that he could be a little bit of a microwave scorer off the bench at times for teams. Again, I think that there's a world where he is able to excel in bursts in isolation offense and showed like some okay-ish flashes of playmaking. There were all obviously turnovers that needed to be cleaned up too, but like a tertiary playmaker, I guess. I think that he could be a little bit of a spark off the bench that, you know, occasionally really is able to help you go on some runs here and there. Yeah, I think that offense, there is a world in his ceiling that I think that translates pretty well for him.
Yeah, I'm lower on you on him than you, just because I'm trying to think like how many bench small forwards that how many like not elite scorers run ISO? Like we know the league is, the only ISO that really happens in the NBA is elite guys. So if he's not an elite guy, how much ISO could he possibly run?
Well, I think it would be more of, you know, primarily he's playing off ball and then the ball swings in his direction and he has somebody that just I think that he feels he could take advantage of. And I don't think like the plays go up there and just let Elijah Hughes go ISO. But I think that if it develops into that after swinging around a little bit, I think that he'll be able to, you know, try for 5-7 seconds.
Yeah, that's just not desirable to me. I get where you're coming from, but that's it, especially if he's like a tertiary option on a bench unit. I don't know, man.
Could he be like a Jordan Clarkson?
Yeah, and that's not good.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think that's a good thing. I think that especially trying to picture him on a good team, I don't see that at all. Like, I could see him being this like weird kind of innings eater on a bad team, like just a bench unit that just has no scores on it on one of the worst teams. All right, like, this guy has got a little juice. Like, let's, you know, we're not going to win this game anyway. Let him get some shots up. But trying to imagine him on a playoff team, what's his role on a playoff team?
Right. It's a rough situation there for sure. He would need a lot of development in regards to being able to knock down shots off the ball and kind of find positions there. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not really sure. Like, yeah, it's probably more of like a even like Orlando, New York sort of thing, or like you're saying, they need this scoring punch and are kind of desperate there off the bench.
Right. It would rely on a lot of development, and he is not a young guy. So, but yeah, I think there's a reason we talked about a number two. It's not, I would say for me personally, we did Stanley first and I had a tier break there. So
huge tier break.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we're on the same page.
And then we get to community college basketball. We got Jace.
Here we go.
Yeah, this was – I could not believe I was watching this earlier today. I was like, man, what is going on? The numbers I have for Jace Grubb at John A. Logan College in his second season are 21.9 points. This is from the community college website.
Yeah, I mean, don't even bother. Go ahead.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's so hard to find numbers on this guy. But athletically, like, he's this long. Vecini has him as 6'5 with a 6'10 wingspan. And he's this extremely lengthy and slender guy that has a really nice athleticism to him. And you would think he could get to the rim and be able to throw it down at times there. And then also, like, a promising shooting stroke, but it's a super raw prospect playing against guys that listeners are probably playing against at the 24.
Yeah. Wait, would you say that listeners?
Yeah. Like, you're probably playing against his level of competition at your 24 hour fitness.
Oh, okay. You're 24. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, but dominant at the Y, right? I mean, truly dominant. He was absolutely just destroyed the competition at his level. One problem with that, I think he became so dominant offensively that he just never tried on defense.
Yeah.
Never is extreme, but certainly didn't feel a need to try on any sort of consistent level. And that's really problematic because you watch this tape and you're like, oh no, he just got cooked by some community college kid that I've never heard of and we will never hear of. But it also is just, okay, well, he didn't try at all on that defensive possession. So it's worrisome. It's very worrisome. He is, however, a fantastic athlete, a fantastic finisher, a really creative shot maker. I love to see a lefty ISO scorer just kind of create, pull up in the mid-range and drain a jumper. Like, there's something aesthetically beautiful about it. And that does excite me significantly.
Yeah, it's exciting. Like, he's so difficult to gauge. So, like you mentioned, the defense kind of weighing. And then I also think that because he was – like, actually a superstar at his level of play, that there were also, you know, some superstar shots that he was able to put up that were just straight up bad decisions. But yeah, I mean, you got to, again, take into account that the role he was asked to play due to the competition level that he's against. Yeah, it's so hard to gauge this guy. Like, he's such an upside swing that you're going for here, and you're really betting on the body and athleticism that he's working with. And like you said, I would say the main thing really is that finishing. And then there's also a jump shot that I think a team could talk themselves into, like an okay form. And on the site, it does say, and I totally just exit out of it here, 33% on 4.2 attempts. I mean, take these numbers for what you will, again, from their site, but like there's a shot that you could talk yourself into, and mainly that finishing and the athleticism, right? With this length.
Hell yeah, I can talk myself into it. I've already done it. I've already talked myself into Jay Scrubb. I'm such a big fan of Jay Scrubb. I would love for the Kings to draft him and for him to play in the G League just about 15 minutes from my house. I would love it. I would go to every game and I'd watch Jay Scrubb develop in the G League. Yeah, man, you can't like really cap his ceiling necessarily. You can't really. Like, I think there are certain things. I don't think he's a good passer, really. I don't think that he's ever going to be a good, like, high IQ defender at this point, because you watch him not do that at the community college level, and you can't say to yourself, well, but yeah, he'll do it in the NBA though.
Right. But like, he's had such low level of coaching also. Like, the idea is that there is potentially a very big jump that this guy could take.
Yeah. Totally just random question. What's like the difference in the level of coaching between like the best community college coach in the world and like a lower level G League coach?
Oh, G League? I wonder.
I have no idea. Totally rhetorical question.
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, like if we're talking like actually best community college ghost, it's probably some guy that is totally deserving of a better job, but just chose to be there for whatever random reason. So sure, if Jay Scrubb ended up with one of these like coaches that probably should be coached at a higher level, but yeah, I don't know. Like, there's going to be new things to learn for him.
And we don't even know who the Kings G League coach is going to be. Right. We hope and wish that it would be Ty Ellis. We love you, Ty Ellis. If you're listening, huge shouts out, huge fans of Ty Ellis on this podcast. But, you know, with the whatever is happening with the Kings right now and how they're handling their G League, you know, we have no freaking clue what's going to happen there. So anyway, to move on from that sort of the translation and the different levels, trying to understand, because we just don't know. Like, that I under swing skills for him, I just put everything. Like, there, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, I'm with you.
But yeah, I mean, there's okay, so bankable things. Let's try to break this down a little, let's refine this a little bit. He's a great athlete. He's a really good finisher, really good shot maker. Now, like, good tools also, I'd say, but the fundamentals are in the negative category, the weaknesses for sure. The effort on defense is there for sure. The passing ball movement stuff for sure. I think he is too left-hand dominant. That's, you know, there's of the clips that you can find of him in community college, there's a lot of him when he should be finishing righty, he's forcing it into finishing lefty. That's a concern as well. But yeah, I'm like, everything else is in between. As far as ceiling though, I gave this man a very high ceiling, higher than anyone that we did today and anyone we did last time. So wow. all these shooting guards and small forwards, I have him as the highest ceiling here. And I don't even think it's like really that close as far as my specific ceiling.
Okay. I had Jamias Ramsey a little close ceiling wise.
It's fair.
But I'm with you. And I think this is like exactly the type of guy that Sacramento needs to take a swing on.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see it. I have Cassius Stanley and Jamias Ramsey relatively close. Not super close, but I also, just for a floor, so you know I do the number thing.
Mm-hmm.
Literal zero.
Yeah.
It's a straight up zero. And that's way lower than anyone else I gave. So even though I gave him the benefit of the doubt on the ceiling grade. I took that away on the floor grade.
Yeah, understandably. I'm definitely with you there. And I think that he was able to kind of just use that length and athleticism to kind of do whatever he wanted at the community college level. And he's going to need to obviously learn to be more reactionary to defenses and read how they're guarding him. There was some clips of like even teammates and opposing guys he had that had ridiculous length or height to them, but like it's obviously not NBA level athletes he's going against. I think that once teams are actually able to slow him down, that it's going to kind of shock him a little bit, because I don't think that happened all too much at the next level, or you know, he's going to be a raw guy that is traveling a bit too much or is constantly drawing charges or offensive fouls, charges drawn against him. So yeah, there's going to be a learning curve, but this is totally the guy Sacramento should take a swing on. And I think that, you know, Vecini has him ranked at, as I pull it up here, 48. Yeah, like, I mean, 43 for Sacramento.
Yeah, 43. Do it. I think that I thought it was going to be a super hot take to say he's in my top 45, but that's not even far off from Vecini. No, I'm super excited. How do you just, not talking about the translation from community college, but just the actual fact of him being a community college guy, how does that affect your perception of him? So specifically the fact that there's been a lot of NBA players that have gone through community college, but they always, I'm pretty sure, literally have always gone to a 4-year first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jimmy Butler's the main one I can think of that ended up transferring to Marquette after. But yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I guess I hadn't thought of like why would he not have jumped up to the next level. I mean, he had a pretty good freshman year that he was working with at this community college as well. But yeah, I mean, like I couldn't help but also think of Poku a bit at times where it's like, you know, these are both really low competition levels, but you just get enamored with the tools and athleticism or yeah, I mean the things that you could see eventually translating and going well for this guy. So yeah, I mean, I definitely was just more focused on his individual tools and yeah, kind of did my best to look past that low competition level.
So I have a little bit of the background here. This is what I've gathered by reading up on him. Okay. He had D1 offers coming out of high school and there were academic qualification issues. So that to you, is there a potential red flag there? And then also on the flip side of that, he had a D1 offer from Louisville to go there next season instead of the NBA, where he could have potentially built his draft stock at that level, and has chosen to stay in the draft. And does that, you know, did those two things mean anything to you?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the first part with him, the academics being the struggle, I don't think, sure, it's a little concerning, but I don't think it's a reason to have this major red flag or anything. You know, I think that some of these guys, basketball is their priority and maybe they didn't put as much time in as he needed to or things like that. I don't think that when it comes to how he's going to be as a basketball player and obviously as a person as well, that necessarily scares me away or anything like that. And then in regards to an offer from Louisville, it almost like, I almost want to say that could speak to like his confidence, because like more likely than not, right, you would think that he's going to go to Louisville and be able to show out and probably be a first rounder next year. But, you know, could you take him going into the draft directly as like him being skeptical of like, what if I go to Louisville and just kind of shit the bed?
Yeah, and this is all speculation. For on the first question, your response, I completely agree with. Like, I don't see it as a red flag that he had academic qualification issues. I don't want to get off in the weeds here, but your grades, if that was even the specific thing that was the issue, I don't think they matter. Like, I think, like, I don't know. This isn't a comment on, like, American education system, but it kind of is. Like, I don't care about that, I guess.
Yeah, what's Anthony Edwards' GPA, you know?
Right, right. I mean, there are certain I don't know what his situation was like, but I think, like, it's easier for certain people in certain situations to do well academically, where, and some of that stuff can be fudged depending on, like, whatever, you know, whatever environment you're coming from in high school. Like, you know, we all know, we've seen people get an easy A on, you know, you take the right classes and you have the right people around you. It's like, that stuff doesn't matter to me. And then on the back side of that question about Louisville, that also I don't think matters to me, because from the speculation is, if it weren't for COVID, he may have gone for that. But, like, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a mixed bag in both directions, but I just thought I'd give that context at least.
Yeah, and I also can't blame him. Like, if you hear, you know, you're probably going to be drafted at the NBA, why not go?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I feel like it was kind of a G League or Louisville choice, and maybe he gets a real NBA contract. But I would guess more likely to get a two-way. I don't know.
Right, which would probably be good for him and be able to go against some actual, you know, NBA level athletes in that sort of tier. I mean, even just jumping into the D League would be a good size next step up for him that I think would do a lot for developing his game and just giving whatever team drafts him a better idea of what they're really working with.
And also, what does one year of college get you, really? Like, in terms of the academics of it, like, do I want to go to this school for a single year and not graduate? Right. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you all right? We move on to Najee Marshall here.
Yeah. I just got to say, I love Jay Scrub.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I'm with you there. Najee Marshall, a junior at Xavier last year, 6'7", 220 pounds. I have a 7-foot wingspan for him and a little bit of a defensive prospect with that wingspan, but 16.8 points, 6.3 rebounds, 4.0 assists, 1.3 steals, 3.4 turnovers on 44.5% from the field, 28.6% from three on 5 attempts a game, and 71% from the free throw line. We started offense for most of these guys. If you're cool with it, I say we start defense for Najee, and that wingspan is probably what gives him some optimism and upside there. I thought he did a pretty good job of staying in front of guys with, like, an okay lateral quickness. But he's definitely, you know, the Nate Hinton of this episode, kind of defensive focused, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Nate Hinton of this episode is super spot on. I really liked his defense and the fact that the defense can be applied to threes. Like, this is a three. Like, Najee Marshall, this is a small forward. You know, we don't have to get into the weeds of the debate here. 6'7", 7-foot wingspan confirmed, 220. Boy, just that alone helps his stock so much, right? Like, I've told you, I snuck Tyler Bay into my first round basically just on the size and, like, thinking of the scarcity of position compared to a bunch of backup point guards or backup centers, you know. It means so much to me, just right out the box.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And I don't think that he's, like, necessarily all over the place either. I thought that he was surprisingly pretty smooth. I kind of touched on a bit of the defensive end. I thought that I would have liked him to be more dominant on that end. I think he did an okay job of getting in passing lanes and things like that. And again, his on-ball defense was good. I thought that off-ball could use a little bit of work, but obviously has the tools he's working with there. And the offensive end is, I mean, like, I thought that he was surprisingly smooth. He was running pick and rolls for Xavier all the time, which I don't think he's doing at the NBA level, but he got an okay playmaking ability. And, you know, when it's swung to him, I think that he's able to, not amazingly, because the dribble needs work for sure, but put the ball on the floor and get to the rim. And if teams rotate, like, just be able to make maybe just, you know, one of the right passes.
Yeah. The handle and the playmaking and driving to the rim. I think he's a good finisher once he gets there, but the general creation package for him, I think, is a little bit of an illusion. I don't think that he did it at a very high level. Like, he did it, you know what I mean? Which yeah. is good, as a lot of guys don't do it, but I don't think he did it well enough for me to have any confidence for him to do it at the NBA level. However, like, he did it, so I'm going to put it in, like, the swing skills, like the playmaking package, the creation for himself and others package. Like, that's the swing stuff for me. And the weaknesses, I think it's pretty clear that his weakness is shooting / kind of preparing for shots. Right? Like, he's yep. not an off-ball offense guy.
Yeah, he's not. And, you know, I think that playmaking that I seem to be a little bit higher on than you could really be nullified a little bit if he doesn't have, like, a somewhat respectable three-point shot, because the only time I feel like he's able to set up for other people is when he's going downhill. And again, I thought he was a little smooth with some Euros, and you touched on it. I thought he was a pretty good finisher, but if teams aren't needing to close out on him at all, which, you know, like 28%, not good, don't get me wrong, but 5 attempts, and he was taking ones that I don't think he's going to be taking at the NBA level. Like, I don't think he's taking anything off the dribble in the NBA or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, like, maybe he could go a little higher, but more likely than not, I mean, Najee's probably a negative three-point shooter, and I think that really hurts the rest of his already limited offensive game.
It really hurts. If that were 35%, I mean, like, it wouldn't be crazy to have first-round conversations. Right. But, like, this is, you know, a 3-and-D 6-7 guy, you could have those first round conversations, but it's just a D. There's no three. And like, I, you know, I mean, that could technically come around. Like, we talk about it with everyone these days. You could say, hey, potentially he could develop a shot, but there's no reason to really believe it at this point that he'd be good at it. Like you said, you think he's probably a negative shooter. So yeah, no, it sucks, because that's just the only thing he's really missing to be a pretty, pretty complete and exciting prospect. And the other knock on him, you know, I'm fixated with it, is age. He's one of the older players in the draft, born January 98, you know, older than Hughes, older than, you know, the oldest guy that we've done in this episode, and almost as old as Skylar Mays, and definitely not as old as Sam Merrill, but still pretty old.
Yeah, definitely is. And again, you'd be buying on him for that defensive upside and just trying to become a passable offensive player, because I don't know, even the defense, while he has the tools, I definitely didn't make him up as some lockdown guy off the ball, or thought that he was really special in regards to getting in passing lanes or reading rotations properly or anything like that. So I think a lot of it really is the tools. And I do kind of want to double down. Like, I thought that he was actually a really freaking good finisher, 69.1% around the basket in on post-ups from synergy, you know, better than Onyeka Okongwu when you're talking in that area. So I will, you know, kind of double down. I think he's really good in that, but in the NBA, is he going to be able to get to the rim in the first place? Yes. I am not so sure.
Yes, absolutely. That's just what I was going to ask you, is how much does finishing matter in and of itself? Because like you just said, how often does he get to the rim if that's his biggest strength on offense. And I think we can use this as a way to transition into Mason Jones, our final guy, who is an incredible finisher. 75.6% at the rim for Mason Jones. Ooh. Insane. But I like, it's kind of, if it's a standalone thing. Anyway, let's get it right into it. Mason Jones of Arkansas, 6'5", unconfirmed wingspan. I think he's probably a little bit more of a 2 than a 3. But the finishing just jumps right off of the page, as well as the foul drawing. I mean, I forget what it is. I don't have it up in front of me, but is it like, it took like
9.1 a game on 82%.
So not only is he absolutely crushing you when he gets to the rim, but you know, if you stop him, I mean, go ahead and stop him. Like, he's just doing so much. When he moves to the rim, he moves well. Try to stop him if you want to. You better stop him, quite frankly. But, you know, if you do, he's going to take 10 free throws a game.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champion, we'll go 6-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Yeah, that's insane. I actually didn't realize the level of finisher that he was. I thought that, you know, a lot of his game that I saw was pulling up off the dribble and creating some space for himself as a sophomore at Arkansas. But even then, like, yeah, he had nice dribble moves, you know, good step backs or hang dribbles and things like that. Change of pace that he was working with, even though he's not the best athlete himself, and crossovers and things like that. But yeah, I mean, on the offensive end, like, I couldn't help but think, like, almost a worse Elijah Hughes. Like,
yes, it's craft, it's ISO, it's like that senior, it's that 4-year guy who is like living off IQ to create for himself. And it's the same problem where if you're a really dominant ISO player in college, but you're not going to be dominant in the NBA, then you shouldn't be in ISO really at all.
Right. And it's funny because, you know, he's the leading guy in Arkansas on points, rebounds, assists, yet Isaiah Joe very likely get drafted higher than him because he's playing a role that is more similar to what he likely would end up playing at the NBA level, similarly to what you're saying here.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I think of all skills, like ISO and offensive post play, because they're so uncommon now in the modern NBA, it's like there's no point. You have to be great or it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I don't think Mason Jones is that level. I think that he did show moments of being able to function off of the ball and, you know, kind of just running in, I guess, the flow of the offense. But again, like, the flow of the offense kind of mainly ran through him. So it's a little bit of a difficult situation, but, you know, hit big time shots for what was a really good team. And I think that he is a good 3-point shooter. I think that when he doesn't have the sort of defensive pressure on him, that he's going to be able to knock down threes at a decent rate. You know, the free throw rate's a good indicator. Like you said, 9 of them a game and knocking down 82%, super promising. And yeah, even 6 threes a game on 35%. And And these are some difficult shots he's taking. Like, I think he's a good three-point shooter. I don't think he's great or anything like that. But, I think that he'll be I think that he has potential to be an off-ball player at the NBA level as well. It's just there's going to be some getting used to with that.
I didn't really love the shot. There's something funky about the form, and I'm going to leave it to people that are longer-term draft prospect evaluators to figure out what that is exactly. But it looks funky to me, and I saw a bunch of people mention it, just like concerns about this form. It looked the only thing that I can say that I personally noticed is that it felt a little bit inconsistent. And it's one of those things that can be covered up by it just dropping. So if it's going down, you know, it's hard to care that much. But when I see a lot of people mentioning it and something just smells a little funny with it, I'll throw that out there. But the only real downside that I saw to him, other than athleticism, other than the age, the things that are kind of right there in front of you, there were, I think, a lot of defensive issues. He doesn't feel like a super sound defender. Some decision-making on that end and just kind of giving up, I don't know. It just felt like a lot of easy buckets.
Yeah, I think that he leaked out in transition a little bit. And part of me questions how much of that could be due to being the number one guy on offense for that Arkansas team, but I don't feel good projecting him going forward defensively. I probably like Elijah Hughes a little bit better than Air, since I think that he has a bit of a better athleticism that he's working with. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely not the defense that you're bringing Jones in for. I think that more than likely he's a negative on that end. And he's a two probably that I don't even know is going to be quick enough to stay in front of two guards in the NBA.
Right. And his floor is pretty bad. If he's not an NBA caliber athlete and not a plus defender, what is he? Like, yeah.
Right. These are the type of guys that just like ball out in the G League for year after year.
Yeah. I had him fifth on this list for a reason, and I have him kind of in that Skylar Mays, I would call him, you know, you called Marshall like the Hinton of this episode. Mm-hmm. I would call Jones the Mays of this episode.
Okay. I probably like Jones a little better just because he's a bit younger, right? Actually, I don't have the ages in front of me, but I know Jones was a sophomore at Arkansas.
He is younger. He's not that much younger, though. I mean, it's, let's see here, 9 months.
Wow.
Younger, 10 months younger. He's an old sophomore. Not much at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, 98. So, yeah, it's, I think that part of it's a bit of an illusion. I had him higher than Mays. So, like, when I finally graded them all out, I did have him higher than Mays, but only one spot higher on my board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we're talking, I think we kind of touched on Ramsey and Scrub, right? I think they're, or I guess I'll ask you, like, which do you like better for Sacramento? Say at 35, you had to be selecting one of Jamias Ramsey or Jay Scrub. So I feel like they're kind of comparable.
That's interesting. I definitely went Ramsey. I would definitely, like, on my board, I went Ramsey higher than Scrub. I would double down on that specifically for Sacramento. I think that Ramsey is younger and obviously showed more at a higher level. So I think, you know, part of that is a bit of a floor play, but Ramsey's no slouch either in terms of his ceiling. So yeah, I would say give me Ramsey.
Mm-hmm. And then I want to ask you, I feel like the two other comparable guys come with last episode are Emmanuel Quickley and Cassius Stanley, you know, two guys that were role players at Duke and then Kentucky. I flip-flop between the two because, you know, Quickley, I personally like his defense better than Stanley's, but obviously you have the athleticism that you're working there with Cassius. I probably lean Emmanuel Quickly because I think both of them project as likely 3-and-D guys, and I just feel more confident in Quickly doing that. What do you think between the two of them?
I have Stanley higher. I have Stanley as the best prospect of all 10 guys we've done here, of all like these wing guys. So
wow, okay.
Yeah, I ended up, just to kind of give my combined rankings between this and the last episode, because they're kind of the same position, I went Stanley 1, Ramsey 2, Quickly 3.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I went Ramsey 1, Quickly 2, Stanley 3. I do have the whole thing here, and then I have Jay Scrub 4. I have Sam Merrill 5, Elijah Hughes 6, Najee Marshall 7, Nate Hinton 8, Mason Jones 9, Skylar Mays 10.
So we didn't do them today in your order.
Where did I get thrown off here?
You have Scrub above Hughes.
I'm sorry. I said that backwards. Switch those two.
Let me simplify this. Cassius Stanley is my 1. You have him 3 behind Ramsey and Quickly, right?
Yes.
But that's both of our consensus top 3. So let's just focus on those 3 for a second. I think it's nice that we've got a tier here, Stanley, Ramsey, Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to like really debate it, I don't think, too much, but I'll just say the reason I put Stanley 1 is the theory makes sense. Like, I think he can be a super bouncy 3-and-D guy, and it just, that just clicks, that works. It's valuable if it works. Ramsey is a bit more raw, and I don't think he has the defensive upside personally. And then Quickly, these three are close together for me. Quickly, I'm worried about the size and the frame a little bit too much.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that, you know, Ramsey, I have 1. I think that he just clearly has the highest upside out of this group. And I think that his floor is still like an okay shot maker. And I think I buy the defense a little bit more than you, since I think he's got some nice length to him. And then Quickly and Stanley, again, I think are super interchangeable between my 2 and 3 there. Both 3-and-D guys. And I think that, yeah, I mean, on any given day, I could kind of flip between the two, but currently have Quickly 2 because they project as 3-and-D prospects. And I buy the defense of Quickly while I'm a little skeptical of Stanley's at times.
Then our next tier, this is really like a tight tier. Like I like truly could even flip flop, I guess. But for me, this tier is the middle 4 of this 10. I went Hughes, Scrub, Marshall, Hinton.
Okay. So I'm with you, but I'm putting Sam Merrill in the group for myself. Okay. I have Hughes, and then I have Scrub and then Merrill. I have an arrow between the two of them. I was totally flip-flopping back and forth between which one was ahead of the other here. And yeah, it's just going to vary team to team if you're, you know, looking for a project swing or the safer guy, obviously. And then I have Najee Marshall, who I put higher than Hinton because of the tools he's working with that 7-foot wingspan, really. And, you know, Hinton, I think, has a more projectable 3-point shot that he's working with. But the frame gave Marshall the edge there for me.
Yeah, we're pretty aligned. And then my bottom 3, I know you're going to have Merrill higher, but my bottom 3 in order, Mason Jones, Skylar Mays, Sam Merrill at the very bottom.
You have Merrill below Mays? Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we talked about this. We went over this.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, but we're not too far off. We're not too far off. And if you're talking Sacramento, what? So 35, like I think we've mentioned Ramsey. And then once you get to 43, like, how do you feel if a Elijah Hughes is taken, a guy that we see as more of, you know, obviously one of these older prospects with probably a lower ceiling than someone like a Jay Scrub.
You're asking me for Sacramento. You said Scrub versus who?
Like Elijah Hughes.
Yeah, that's very tough. I have them, you know, 42, 43. And in my numerical grading system, I have them 1 point apart. So
then you got to go the upside for Sacramento now.
For Sacramento, yes. Give me J Scrub.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I think that that's pretty much it. I'm kind of a coin flip between Marshall Hinton. Yeah, do you have anything else on these guys here?
Yeah, I guess the coin flip is about right, Marshall and Hinton. I think something is like worrying me about Hinton. The fact that the size is not great just scares me a little bit. Where I'd almost rather have the upside of Marshall potentially coming around as a shooter, because Hinton can't come around to being 6'7 with a 6'10 wingspan or 7 foot wingspan.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think that when you're talking about these guys, obviously age does matter, but when you're talking mid second round, late second round, more likely than not, a lot of these guys just aren't even going to work out in the league. So while age does play a factor, it's obviously more valuable to have the older guy that actually gives you any NBA minutes compared to the younger guy that just never sees the floor.
Yeah, and just to harp on age, because I've been doing it a lot. Out of this group, Ramsey is the youngest by a significant margin, you know, more than 5 years younger than Sam Merrill.
Jesus.
More than 5 years younger than Sam Merrill. And then the second youngest is Jay Scrub. So I think there's a reason that we're kind of drawn to Ramsey and Scrub. Mm-hmm. The oldest obviously being Sam Merrill. And then, you know, like no one can get close to him, obviously, but Mays is very old as well. Like he's a year and 4 months younger than Sam Merrill, which means he's very old.
My God. Yeah. So what you're saying is you're the Sam Merrill of this podcast. I'm the Jamias Ramsey.
Yeah.
That one's going on.
That's true. We both went to community college though. So
true.
We're both the J Scrub.
We're both a little J Scrub. Yeah. I'm gladly take a 7 foot wingspan. Sure. Sure.
You know, just to wrap up the end of the podcast here, you know what I did while I was researching J Scrub earlier? I just threw on some Community.
Wow.
It's a great show. It just brought me back to those days. I've been to a lot of community colleges. And
same here.
It brought me back to those days. There's some good City College San Francisco days. Something about that show, it gets that nostalgia going for me of the City College days and watching J Scrub tape. So it was a very enjoyable afternoon.
I'm super late, but I'm actually on my first watch through of Community right now. I think I'm only on like season two.
I'm on season two on my like 50th watch through. It's so good. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely enjoying it. I think it's a good time. I was definitely sitting on my couch just laughing on occasion that I was sitting here watching Community College on my Friday. I think it's great. I love it.
I love it. Draft Jay Scrub.
Oh, yeah. There we go. We're going to swill it into existence. Screw Malachi Flynn. I want Jay Scrub.
Yeah. Okay. We'll end it there. We'll compare these guys to other guys later, but I have a here. I'll send us out on a really hot take.
All right.
Jay Scrub over Devon Dotson.
Oh, I don't know. Okay. All right. I see it. I see it.
Excellent.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed this, there definitely will be additional draft content, and you could even respond to this podcast's post at the King's Herald, kingsherald.com. Let us know who you want to hear next. I think we have a little bit of a list of guys, but could fit some more in if there's anybody that you happen to be interested in, or, you know, your local community college players. Apparently that's what we're going with here. But definitely check out the great work that's done on that website. Big things come in there. And go support the Patreon to support Independent Kings coverage there. If you enjoyed this episode of the Kings Pulse podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. And you'll hear from us again in the next couple of days here.